Film Vault. Yeah, Film Vault. Not wasting any time getting right into it. Mm-hmm. Thanks for joining us. That's Anthony.
Yeah.
I'm Brian Bishop. We're your hosts. For today, top five dream writer-director pairings.
The
Well, Logan Paul called a writer-director dream pairings.
All right, I'm calling it like Frankenstein. That's okay. In my notes. No one needs to know about that.
You just said it at the very top of the show. Can't be missed.
Yeah. This was a fun week.
I agree. I enjoyed this exercise.
This was entirely just me driving around or sitting around with a boy. Every time I'd have you, not every time, but you know, I found myself doing a lot of daydreaming. So, hey, it works because it's called dream pairing.
There you go.
And I like just kind of like cherry picking, you know, different teams or would-be teams.
I agree. I enjoyed.
And, you know, we could do this probably like once a year because there's no way that I have all, you know, all of my teams.
All permutations.
I'm not doing any All-Star Rands here, Brian.
Fair enough.
Feel good about your list?
I very much do.
Did you try and get very clever here?
Well, it depends on what you call clever. I had a method of my madness. I didn't want it to just turn into, here's five directors I like, here's five writers I like.
Right, what was your method?
My method of my madness was I wanted to... And this is me. You can, of course, do whatever you want. And the listeners probably did a different thing. But I wanted to.
Is there a listener list? How would they do that?
Is there a listener list?
I put out a call. We'll see what it gets.
We'll see what it gets.
I'm going to do it right now.
Okay.
I try to pick directors who I think are talented directors and maybe either pick bad projects or try and write projects that maybe they shouldn't. Mm-hmm. Try and bite off a little too much they can chew with the writing.
Very sound thinking, Brian.
And I also try to pick writers that maybe. Match those directors or haven't had their work properly turned into movies. So I try to, you know, I'm almost doing a little bit of rehab here. I'm trying to act like a manager in this respect. Like, yeah, you two need each other. You should work together. All right. What about you?
I just picked people that I liked and put them together. No, actually, there's out of the 10 names, there's a few that I don't even like.
Really?
Oh, yes. But I would love. I did a couple stunts.
There's a couple that I like less. A
couple stunt pairings, just mm-hmm. because I would love to see what that mashup would look like.
Okay.
Just because I can't even imagine it because my brain is breaking just imagining.
Did you go so far as to like imagine a stunt pairing of like how it would play out on set, like these two personalities?
Well, no, because the writers rarely
like David O. Russell and like Woody Allen
rarely on set. I did not include Woody Allen because he diddles children, allegedly.
There's no child directors on it.
So I'm trying not to have Woody Allen in part of my lexicon anymore.
Woody Allen and Ron Howard, and Woody Allen's constantly looking at looking, the one that got away.
I used to love you when you were
the
younger.
One, the one that...
It's a damn shame. Woody's side.
What could have been?
Until the latest allegations of the child and whatnot. It's like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right, let's
move the guy's funny. Hey, the guy's funny.
And
give the devil his due.
He's prolific. I mean, every single year he makes one, you know?
Did he have a movie come out this year?
Every year he makes a movie, Brian, for the last... Year. 40 years, I think, every single year.
His work ethic is pretty insane.
Hey, this Woody Allen not being part of my world, going over real good so far.
Why is that?
Because we're talking about it nonstop. Let's move on.
Should we flick fast?
Yeah, let's do that.
Let's jump right into it and to talk about the movies we've seen in the past week.
Fashion.
We'll confess the flicks we've seen and call it flick fashions.
Flick fashion.
Anderson assigned me a film.
I did.
Oof. I mean, oh. He assigned me a movie.
Once Upon a Time.
Called Somewhere in Time.
Somewhere in Time. What did you just say?
Nothing.
The mouse died. What did you say?
That's a foreshadow.
What's that?
What's the precious metal from...
Pennies?
From Avatar?
Oh, stop it. Brian's referring to a spot that
they'll
we did
find
in the
out.
Future.
They'll find
and
out.
And I had a problem with saying a word
they'll
appropriately.
They'll find out.
I can't say peculiar either, all right? You're gonna ask me to say peculiar all the time now?
There's so many synonyms, though. It's odd.
Peculiar.
Queer. Queer.
I know. I can avoid peculiar.
Mm-hmm. Somewhere in Time came up last week on movies that influenced relationships. Can you set the table and explain again why? Was this on your actual top five?
Yeah.
So explain
no.
how.
No, it was
also
not.
Ran?
Also ran.
How and why this almost influenced your
this
relationships?
This is a film, believe it or not, that I found as a child. Watched it a lot, probably in between 8 and 11 years old.
Mm-hmm. Was because it was on TV a lot, or because you had
it was
DVD
just one of those
VHS?
Movies. I remember we taped it on our Betamax off of HBO, and it's one of those movies I had like a collection, probably about 30 different movies that I had taped at one time or another, and I would watch them. If I couldn't find anything else on TV, I would just pop in one of these movies, and Once Upon a Time. What's it called?
Somewhere in Time. This movie that you love so much.
I do like it a lot. I like it very, very much. Jane Seymour, Christopher Reeve, and it's about time travel. And it's one of the first. I was kind of into time travel when I was younger. Mm-hmm. I love Time Bandits, and I love this one. And this one, I didn't realize it at the time, but this is a romantic film.
Yes, it is.
And
bald-faced romance.
Huge Superman fan as well. Romance. That's probably what kind of drew me to it. I'm like, hey, my God, it's Superman, but he's doing something else. He's flying. Yeah.
He's not beating anyone up.
And it really did, I think, affect the way that I view relationships. And I understood. This movie makes you understand love, even at a very young age. I was very young, and I'm like, that's what it probably feels like to love someone that much.
All right.
The deep depression that he goes into. Like, so I really respond to that.
When is the last time you saw this?
Are you going to say it doesn't hold up? Is that what you're going to say?
I'm just asking questions.
I saw it last night, and I was sober as can be. And
you enjoy it just as much, if not more than ever.
No, it's been probably 30 years since I've seen
it. Explains a lot. Somewhere in Time from 1980, directed by Jeannot Schwarc. S-Z-W-A-R-C. He's a French man, Jeannot Schwarc. How do you pronounce the S? I don't care.
Not important.
He's the director of bad movies, Jaws 2, Supergirl, which almost made my list of trailers to play at our live show back when we played the 80s trailers, and Santa Claus the Movie, which was a movie that should have been loved by me, or whatever, 10 or 11 at the time, and was not. Mm-hmm. Starring Christopher Reeve, Jane Seymour, and Christopher Plummer. Mm-hmm. Nominated for an Oscar Best Costume Design.
Right.
This movie has a remarkable production design. It's so, like Anderson said, it is about a man in 1980 who time travels, or maybe he does not, travels back to 1912, I think it is, because, okay, how much to talk about the plot?
This movie's got a cult following.
It does have a cult following.
I can understand that, because when I was a small child, I would have joined that cult.
I don't want you to, okay, I'm not going to. This movie's 59% of Rotten Tomatoes. It's far too high. however, I'm not going to dismiss like you. Like, you know what? When you watch movies that I love or that I think maybe you'll like, and you take every opportunity to crap all over, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to say
you're
this
trying
movie
to illustrate that you're a better
person. I'm bigger and better than you are. This movie is not a good movie. However, I can very clearly sense and almost see there's like a good movie just like floating underneath.
All right. It's 1980 too. All right, you have to understand that it wasn't the golden era.
They didn't
era
make any good movies. Raging Bull wasn't made in 1980.
There's a few good ones. But also said the 80s. Best. 80s, like 70s was the golden era of cinema, and then they started
this
to kind
leading
of
into,
there's some backsliding going on.
Yeah, this wasn't one of those kinds of movies, though. So, okay, so the here main issue with the movie is that the guy time travels back into 1912 or whatever it is, but the way he does it is he literally self hypnotizes himself and like goes to bed one night and wakes up and it's 1912, which is very hard to suspend your disbelief. But okay, I'll see this out where it goes. It doesn't get a whole lot better from there, but it's based on a novel by Richard Matheson. He did What Dreams May Come, and the novel is called Bid Time Return, which is not a very good title. But so the main character, the Christopher Reeve character in that, is dying of an operable brain tumor. And thus, it kind of brings up the possibility that maybe he's imagining this, because in the movie and in the book, he kind of just wills himself.
Like Phenomenon.
He wills himself. Yeah, exactly. Similar. He wills himself to go back in time.
Like About Time.
And well, About Time, I don't think there's any question that he's actually time traveling, is there?
But he's willing himself.
Oh, but no, there's a closet involved.
You just go in the closet and you think really hard. You go in the closet just to block things out.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yes, in this sense.
Would it have been better if there was a time machine?
I think it could have been improved if they stayed true to the novel, where you don't, maybe this guy's suffering from a disease or a terminal situation.
Right.
Maybe he's insane. And that brings up a question that kind of makes it interesting. As it was
unreliable
very,
narrator. They called
it. I would have actually liked a little wrinkle like that. As it was just kind of like, you know what it reminded me of? It reminds
a great
me,
movie.
Yes, it reminded me of a great movie, 2001, where remember at the end when he's in the room, the white room, and it's like made by space aliens, but it's
what?
A room that
there's no saying that is all ambiguous.
One interpretation is that it's a room constructed by aliens, almost like a zoo.
Could be
like,
the afterlife, Brian.
Could be the afterlife, or could be a transitional period where they have populated it with things that they think
it's probably fake.
He'll recognize. Yeah, right. Exactly. It's not an actual room. It's like a zoo almost, or like an aquarium or a terrarium.
Right.
It's like something's a little bit off. This is a room. I recognize all the trappings of a room, but this isn't like right. That's what this felt like as a love story. It's like I recognize that like there's lush music. The score was beautiful. The John Barry score was beautiful. The costumes were beautiful. The production design. It was all great.
That hotel was great.
The hotel. I want to go there.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
They descend on that hotel
every,
once a year.
Every year.
I think.
Yeah. And like recreate like certain scenes from the movie. But something was off. It just didn't. And maybe it was a language thing. Maybe it was the director, Jeannot Schwartz.
I think it was a product of its time, too, 1980. A little bit of schlocky, especially with the love stories and whatnot.
Could have been.
I responded to it as a child. I've not seen it since I've become an adult, and I would not be shocked. I kind of sent you out on a mission to watch it for me. Let me know.
Can't recommend.
All right.
Didn't hate it, but just overall was not great.
All right, moving on. I saw a film. Not going to talk much about this because it's not wide release yet, so very few of our listeners have seen Wind River.
What is Wind River?
Oh, what is Wind River?
Wait, is that the one from Sundance?
Taylor Sheridan writes and directs.
Yeah, from Sicario.
He is the writer of Sicario.
Yes.
And Hell or High Water.
Yeah.
And he is directing now. He directed this.
I think this might be number one on my Sundance list.
I don't know if it was at Sundance. I don't believe it was at Sundance. I don't think it was at Sundance.
Okay.
Why don't you check and figure it out and get back to us.
Sundance preview, number one.
Really?
Yep.
This stars Elizabeth Olsen and Jeremy Renner.
Jeremy Renner and Elizabeth Olsen.
Elizabeth Olsen, I'm not familiar with her. Are you familiar with her?
No.
She's not one of the Olsen twins, before you ask.
Well, then never mind.
Her credits, I've seen her before, but I'm not familiar with her. She was in Godzilla, the 2014 one. She was also in Captain America. She plays Wonder Maximo or whatever in both Avengers and Captain America. So many, many nerds know who she is. I do not. I her face looked familiar. She was a revelation. She had not since Felicity Jones have I been so enthusiastic about a new actress. She was great.
She is just delightful.
She's not hard to look at, and she plays like a Clarice type FBI. When I say Clarice, I'm talking Jodie Foster and Silence of the Lambs.
She was in the Old Boy.
Yes, she was also in the new Old Boy, which does not exist.
The real Old Boy.
It's the new Old Boy that does not exist on my radar. Much like Woody Allen. Ooh, Woody Allen, Spike Lee, get together. See what you guys made.
Oh, no. And then natural disaster occurs.
It would just be all about New York. I think we all know that. All right. So the storyline of this Wind River, it opens up with a poem. You're hearing a poem, which made me float above my seat a little bit. I don't like hearing poetry read to me. And a woman running in the snow in her bare feet. And it's a gorgeous shot. It's like, you know, full moon night and lit with the moon, and she's just running in this like just tundra right at night, and she collapses. And cut to, we get Jeremy Renner killing animals, shooting and killing coyotes.
That's a cold open, huh?
And I'm in my head, I'm thinking, I knew, you know, it's about a cold front, and this all takes place in Montana, like in a cold region, but. You know how I feel about these snowy tundra films. I rarely like them.
Have we done top five snow scenes?
Yes,
we have. Right?
Yes, we have. So he's a hunter. He gets hired like out there in the open land in Montana to kill predators that are like preying on local livestock and whatnot. So very realistic looking gunshot to the body of a coyote, that are stalking some sheep. So that's disturbing.
Sounds very pleasant so far.
And then he gets called in he gets involved in this murder that took place, which was the girl that's running through the snow, right? And blizzard starts coming in, and we get to see the local Indian, the FBI for the Indian Nation, because it all took place on Indian grounds.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I remember the hook.
So they have the TBI, I believe, the Tribal Bureau of Investigation and Tribal Police. So he's a character, and Jeremy Renner is... you know what? Honestly, I don't even fully remember exactly how he got involved. He does know the victim, but then this city folk girl, you know, she flies in from Las Vegas to Montana, FBI. She gets brought in. They need to figure it out. And she asks Jeremy Renner to continue to help her because she feels comfortable with him. And they make an unlikely team, but the movie has a lot of grit. As you would imagine, it feels like Sicario. For sure. It's less fun than Hell or High Water.
Okay.
But this movie is very engaging and quality picture. I wouldn't be shocked if it was up for Best Picture. I think it very well might be.
Did you like it enough to put in your...
It won't make my top 10.
Oh, okay.
Because there's not enough fun in it. Okay. It's a little bit dreary. It's a little bit too Mystic River for me. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit too depressing. I think there's like two times where I like kind of...
Too much River Wild. Not enough River Wild. Too much Mystic River.
You know me, like I just want.
You love rivers.
I mean, there was a couple lines where it's like, oh no, like did he just say that? Now I've also heard from a listener and friend of the show, Rand Courtney, who he saw this at a symposium with the director, with Sheridan, who claimed that he wrote this. He wrote Wind River, Sicario, and Hell or High Water in 6 months.
Yeah. If you're on enough cocaine or
that's exactly what it means. So Rand, my buddy Rand, he texted me this. He's like, I saw this last night, and I was, the director did a Q&A after, and the fucker says that he wrote these three films in 6 months. And I said, yeah, and he probably went broke on cocaine as well while doing so. Because, sure. I mean, if you do enough coke, you give me...
You're pretty prolific.
Give me like endless rounds of eight balls. Right. I will...
Pump out some screenplays.
It'll probably be shit, but I'll write a lot. Oh, I'll write you some shit. But yeah, this...
I'll give you pages.
This is a it was a good film. There's a few moments that don't make it a great film for me that made me kind of float, especially involving the Indian chief, and it was depressing to say the least. And it's just that snowy, that just bleak,
sort of bleak, landscape.
But the bleakness, like he used it to his advantage. A lot of snowmobiling because that's how they get around up there. There's a great shot of a mountain lion and two cubs. Like I never see. I don't know how they even got that shot. And there's some colorful characters to say the least. And just to be warned, though, this movie is gritty. There is an intense, ridiculously difficult to watch. Considering what I've seen, I shouldn't say that. Yeah. But it's a tough rape
from
scene.
Most people.
There's a tough rape scene in it. And
have we done tough five rape scenes?
Well, I don't think we should ever do that. I don't
really. Equating them with a top five might be a little.
But Elizabeth,
bad taste.
Elizabeth Olsen was by far my favorite thing about this. But Jeremy Renner, quality guy. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But
his mustache.
What's that? Now?
Easy.
John Bernthal is also fantastic in this. John Bernthal, he's one of my favorite actors.
Yeah.
I think right now
he was great in Sicario.
So there you go, Wind River. I suspect this movie will be talked about. It seems like a critic darling to me.
Mm.
And I wouldn't be shocked if it was up for Best Picture.
That's great news.
Possibly
this
Best
was
Director.
My number one most anticipated.
And it did
film
come out
of Sundance.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very good.
I'm sorry I didn't like Somewhere in Time, Anderson.
It's okay. Let's move on.
I did track down a film that you'd recommended a couple of weeks ago. Or I'm pretty sure you recommended it. I remember you liking it. I remember you talking about it. And so I tracked it down, watched it. I don't feel at home in this world anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Don't feel at home. Very different.
I almost
different.
Brought up Jeremy Sonia
very
just now.
Very different from Somewhere in Time.
Very, very different.
Very
film.
Different.
I almost brought because this does feel like a Jeremy Sonia type movie.
Really?
Wind River. Maybe larger scale, maybe more polished and more sleek. But yes, okay, let's talk about I Don't Feel at Home in This World Anymore.
Directed by Macon Blair, who is in the Jeremy Sonia camp.
I'm sure Sonia was on the set for this. They're all like really good friends,
sure.
And they've all been making films since they were in high school together.
Starring Melanie Lynskey, who's one of those great character actors.
Fantastic.
You know exactly who she is if you don't know the name.
Loved seeing her in a lead role.
Yes, totally agree. And Elijah Wood. This is 90% on Rotten Tomatoes. It is streaming on Netflix. And like I said, it has a very Jeremy Sonia vibe. I can really see why you liked it.
Yeah.
Feels very much like if you told me you directed, I'd be like,
I believe it.
I'd buy it.
Yeah.
Won the grand jury prize at Sundance. Speaking of which, the grand jury prize.
It beat Wind River?
This is probably a couple years ago. Actually,
it's
just, it just came out earlier this year.
Probably in a different category.
Probably.
I would assume it's a different category.
Very dark comedy.
Is it that dark?
Yes, for the average. You have to adjust your expectations
and
your criteria. Let's put it this way. The movie opens. Melanie Lynskey is a nurse, and she's not a hospice nurse, but she's dealing with elderly patients. And there is an elderly woman who is clearly clinging to life, and with her last breath utters
very racist slurs.
Things you wouldn't want on your tombstone.
Yeah.
Your last words?
You don't want to hear that from anyone.
From anyone, let alone
in those circumstances.
Someone,
yes,
in circumstances, and then she passes away. And we cut to the very next. We smash cut to the hallway where her grown son and daughter are. You know, they're grieving, and they're in the hallway talking to the doctor and the nurses there, Millie Linsky. And
did she say anything?
And he says to her, "Does she have any last words?" Smash cut to her driving home, and you get the sense that. We really should do top five characters that remind you of your co-host. This is a top five list that's been, how dare you, that's been requested by listeners before.
I think we did.
No, top five, it was actors you would cast as your co-host. And these are characters that remind you of your co-host.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah, that would narrow it down a little bit more.
This would be my female entry. She has a very a world-weary look at the world.
Yeah,
she's not she's not a class half role. She's not sunny side up.
I saw that
she
as making Blair.
She sees the world for the dark place that it is sometimes.
I saw that as making like a genius move on making Blair because he's ingratiating her to the audience immediately. But I guess it's not really going. She's not going to be, you know, doing that for the entire audience. But for me,
for you,
I'm like, this woman. I understand her.
I like where she's coming from.
The title alone,
I like a world
view. Like, you understand the title within the first like you know a few moments of the
absolutely.
Film, and she just wants people to be decent, Brian. She just wants people.
She is in a world where she is at odds. With,
do you know
with,
that I
with the, where the tide is
and to the point now where I'm rolling my window down and yelling people for yelling at people for not using their blinker. I'm like, just use your blinker. It'd be great to know that you're going to turn there. We all have them. Be great to know.
Yeah.
God, I'm an old man yelling out of my car.
You're an old man.
But it's like she would do that, or she would at least want to do that.
No, well, she'd want to. You're right. She'd fantasize that she could because she her character is defined early on being very meek, and Melanie Lynskey plays meek very well, and she comes out of her shell in a very absurd, comical way towards the end of the movie. But you see this character's journey from meek to taking control,
but comfortable in her own skin as herself when she's by herself, which is a lot of the time in the beginning.
Sure, but very socially awkward. Like she does not feel at home in this world anymore. But she doesn't feel comfortable around other people making what would be assumed by us to be normal interaction.
Right.
I don't want to say much more about the plot because it veers off. Like Elijah Wood plays a delightfully bizarre character.
Yeah, a little too much.
A little too much.
But, and that sounds
but
funny.
Also added enough bizarre levity to a movie that would have been very dark.
Took
otherwise.
Me a little while to accept him. Yeah. Maybe because it was Elijah Wood. If it was an actor I had never seen before, maybe I would have.
But it was great that
it was quicker.
It was great that it was Elijah Wood in the sense that this he plays a character who's very into martial arts. But Elijah Wood is and is in this movie a very slight guy. Like he's a small. He's a hobbit. You know what I mean? So watching him be like the guy who wears what was he wearing? Like a bandana or something? Or he
a lot of nunchuck work.
He had the shape. He had like John Goodman's sunglasses from Big Lebowski.
Mm-hmm.
Like he was dressing like John Goodman from the Big Lebowski, Walter. But he was in Elijah Wood's body.
Mm-hmm.
Frodo.
I like this movie a lot. There was a couple shortcomings, such as the Elijah Wood stunt casting, perhaps, or maybe just having a hard time with that character. And then there was a snake. I'm not going to say anything more, but it was kind of a letdown when everything was said and done for me. Anyways, but yeah, I'm glad you finally saw it. It's streaming on the old Fuckflix. It's a Fuckflix original.
It's a tough recommend only because I don't know if it's made for a large audience. If from the description this sounds like a movie you'd be into, you'll know it and you go see it and you'll probably like it. This is a very self-selecting audience.
And I'm gonna have to start doing this now and again because I'm seeing the cuts. I know the movie that I made in Groupers, and you know when I'm nitpicking and I say that Elijah Wood's character is a little bit too big and a little bit too goofy and a little too over the top. It's real hypocrisy for me to be saying things like that because some of my characters are completely ridiculous. But that's the whole tone of the movie.
Yeah,
so
but you need that sometimes with the subject matter, you know, running parallel.
Perhaps, yes. So, you know, honestly, Brian, I take pause and not to, like, you know, Groupers is going to be seen like by everyone. But I do thank you for that. But I do, you know, I don't want to be a dude. She was talking, you know, I'm more and more careful not to be talking shit about other movies unless they're big. I don't like to talk badly about little movies. I just don't talk about them.
Sure.
Or I rave about them if I love them. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah,
but if they're a big movie that
totally
I'm supposed to like, that's critic proof, I have no problem with nitpicking.
I get it.
Detroit.
Oh.
Detroit.
I didn't see. Sorry, man.
You didn't see the two big movies this week.
I didn't.
There's two big movies, Brian.
Does it have a bug on me?
It's one less day we have this week.
And
you didn't see the two big movies.
I went out of town
movies.
This weekend, though.
So where'd you go?
Isn't one of them streaming, too?
What?
Isn't Detroit streaming?
No.
What?
Oh, I thought it was a Netflix movie.
Uh-uh.
It might be a Netflix movie that's in theaters.
Oh, they're doing that now where they don't put it out?
Like Amazon did with...
Wait a minute.
Like Amazon
but Netflix didn't used to... They would always put it out in theaters the same day they put it out.
The same day.
Well,
yeah, there's no way... There's never been a Netflix movie that's come out. Will you search for that? There's no way this is not
Netflix.
If
Detroit was on Netflix, we'd have heard... We were relentlessly seeing...
They would have been... Because I'm on Netflix every day, and they'd be like, Detroit, 3 days. Yeah.
That's a good point.
There's no way it's a Netflix film.
All right, tell me about it.
All right, so I went in knowing very little. It's my number one most anticipated summer movie, which now I should just know is like the death nail for any movie.
Catherine Bigelow
directed. Of course, she did Near Dark, which Brian never saw. You saw like 16 minutes of it.
I saw most of it.
Get Out.
She did not do Get Out.
Hurt Locker. She did not do.
Point Break.
I was telling Brian to Get Out. Point Break, Hurt Locker, as well as Zero Dark Thirty. And I really felt like it was Zero Dark Thirty anyways. It was a masterpiece, and I absolutely loved
it. I love that movie.
However, there was a lot of controversy going on about the torture scenes and whatnot that, sure. that came out of that movie. And, you know, obviously she's got her politics involved, and they get involved with her storytelling, which I think is kind of hard to do when you got
hard not to do.
Hard not to do. It's, yeah, hard to avoid, I should say.
Yeah, you're telling a story from point of view.
And she's also in a position where she's telling this story of the riots of 1967 in Detroit, white racist cops against inner city black.
You can just say youths. White cops, okay?
And she's a white woman, and it's like, how do you tell this story? And you gotta. Anyways, I knew very little about the film. It was my number one just based on the idea of a story about those riots, which I don't know a ton about. They happened before I was born. And Kathryn Bigelow, who's a gritty director, and she blew me away with Zero Dark Thirty.
Right.
And here we go, Detroit. So it opens up with some riot scene that you would imagine. Actually, it opens up with what caused the incite of the entire riot to begin with, which was some cops went in and broke in and shut down an illegal, like, after hours speakeasy type thing, which was mostly black people. And they wanted to take them out in the back, throw them in the paddy wagons, but they couldn't get through the locks, so they had to take them out front and put them in the paddy wagons. And this pissed off a lot of the neighborhood, who all came up, and they started saying, why are you arresting them? Why are you taking, like, three paddy wagons full of, like, black people from the neighborhood they were throwing in there. And gritty filmmaking once again, you know, a lot of handheld stuff. She intercuts actual footage from the riots, not seamlessly. You always know that you're seeing, like, source footage, but she's cutting back and forth the news reports and whatnot from the actual riots that took place. And that night, the riot starts, and they show, like, you know, some of them are just having fun, some of the people on the street, and some of them are seriously pissed. And then, you know, the first guy throws a rock through a window, and they start looting, like you know, some kind of department store there on the street, riding the bike down the street. And then we're going from various places, and we're seeing different spots in the riot, and it's kind of like turning to day now. They ride it through the night, and we're getting, and then jarring, but all of a sudden we're like in this big like theater. Filled with older white people watching an act that looks like the Supremes singing.
Okay. Right?
And then backstage, we get to know who turn out to be the protagonists of the film, or the main people that we'll get to know in the film. And they're a would-be musical act.
Okay.
Drawing a blank on their name right now.
What do you say would-be?
The Revolts or something.
Because, like, the opening act or something?
What are they? Like, they're getting their chance. They're from Motown. They're getting their chance to sing in front of all these white people. There's producers in the audience. And right before they're about to go up, cops come in and say, hey, there's rioting outside. You guys got to shut this down. It's not safe for these white people to be here. I'm not going to tell the whole story, but I do have massive problems with this movie. Okay. I didn't know. Do you know what it's about? Like, do
no.
you know the story?
I saw a trailer, and the trailer just kind of alludes. It seems like some guys are holed up in a safe house. And of course, all the stuff that goes along with riots and
so
riot
it's
scenes.
Based on an actual, you know, obviously, the riots. And I was thinking, because I haven't read it, I've purposely stayed away from this one, right? I wanted to just go in completely fresh, which is nice to do every now and again if you can do that. Opposite of how I used to be. I used to read way too much about movies and knew the entire story, yeah. But they'll have you believe, and apparently this was the case, but rioting's happening right down the street. And, you know, I was around for the LA riots. I was in the city. I saw rioting happen. And I went down there again to try and go to a rave one of the nights and got screamed at by cops to leave because there was a curfew and almost got arrested. So I saw plenty of rioting. And you don't just go to a hotel across the street and kind of hang out. And apparently in 67 you do. So because this actually happened.
Okay.
The Algiers Hotel is where these musicians, who are now really bummed out that they didn't get to go on stage and sing, they all go to this.
Were they from out of town?
Hotel.
They have no choice, or was it just a curious?
Not really explained.
Okay.
You figure that there's just a lot of riding. The cops are just grabbing at them, like, you know, like if you get the sense that if you get too close to a cop on the street, you're going to get your head bashed in and maybe thrown in jail.
Gotcha.
Like the jails are bursting at the seams because they just don't have holding. They're just arresting every black person on the street that these cops can get. They arrest or beat. So there is that fear tactic going on. And you feel like the chaos and the fear with the handheld camera and the intercutting. So they go to the Algiers Hotel, motel. They rent a room for $11 down the hall. And everything's real mellow in there. It's like the riots aren't even happening. Mm-hmm. They meet a couple white chicks and some other black people. And all of them are young and they're hanging out. And long story short, too late, I know. But
long story longer.
The National Guard, the local Detroit police, as well as another police outfit. I'm not sure if it was a local sheriff's or what. All descend on this hotel after somebody starts maybe possibly firing a gun, maybe not. But they think that there's a sniper. There's a lot of talk of snipers.
Okay.
And the all three of those organizations bum rush this hotel and round up the key characters that we've already gotten to know. And then for about an hour and a half, they're up against the wall. And this is the entire story. And I kept thinking, all right, what's next? That's the story. And this is actually what happened. And they did a lot of research. And it's written by the same guy that did Zero Dark Thirty. Okay. Bulls. They're actually going to do one on Burkdale. You know, the guy that Serial 2 is about, the deserter.
Oh, yeah,
they're gearing up to do a movie about that,
yes.
But for whatever reason...
I thought Burkdale was a place. I'm like, I don't know what that is.
They're gearing up. They're going to be doing a movie about that next, but they jumped to Detroit for whatever reason to tell the story about... I guess it's a story that a lot of people in the know, especially people from Detroit, especially black people from Detroit, have known about this story for a long time. Okay. Here's what...
So what are your impressions of the film?
I'm sorry, I'm doing a lot of talking. There's things in this movie that just don't fucking make sense. I already told you about the motel thing. All right, the lead racist cop, he's a kid you've probably seen. I don't know if you've seen the trailers for this.
I know who this guy is.
Yeah, he was in The Revenant.
Character actor.
He's maybe the youngest person on set at all times.
Right.
Yet he's in charge. Like, I don't know if that's just bad casting. I think they may have cast him because he looks inbred a little bit.
He looks deep south.
Which just, you know, like if you had like eight white guys against the wall, even if you were one of them,
sure,
he'd probably be the one that I would point to that's probably the most likely the racist. You know what I mean?
He has a racist look to him.
Sure. But he seems like the youngest. So we first see him.
A youthful racist look.
He and his two cop buddies are just cruising around watching the riots in the cop car, right? And they kind of come out of nowhere. We don't know anything about these cops other than they're racist. And we hear him saying.
By the way, Huffington Post has a headline. Detroit is the most... irresponsible and dangerous movie of the year.
I wonder why. Well, they're saying it's so irresponsible because I think this is a little bit critic proof. Okay. I don't want to. Okay, so he shoots a guy in the back early in the movie, right? Okay. And cut to him. He's now in the precinct and there's chaos going on because the riots are happening. But his captain says, "You get in here," and he goes, "Why'd you shoot the guy in the back?" And he's like, "Oh, self defense." Well, how is that possible? You don't shoot a guy in the back. Anyways, I'm recommending murder for this because that guy didn't make it. He's saying this to the young cop, right? He said, "Now get back on those streets." I don't know if that actually happened,
right?
But I didn't research. If that did happen, absurd. If it didn't happen, horrible writing.
I've talked about this. I've mentioned it before, and you give me shit for it, but I'll say it again. One thing I learned early on in my creative writing classes, one was, "But it actually happened." Is never an excuse for stilted or bad or whatever you want to call it writing, because just because it happened doesn't mean it has to make it like that on the page.
Will Poulter is the name of the actor.
Will Poulter is the name of the actor.
And he's great. He's got a great look. I really like him.
I'm going to make you watch Where the Miller sometime because he is actually pretty funny in that.
So he's back on the streets now. He's trigger happy. And the only thing we know about him
is British, by the way.
That's crazy. We hear him saying early in it's night and day. These cops don't sleep. Like, we see them early morning. We see them late night. We hear him saying, like, while they're driving around looking at watching the looters, these people just, you know, we keep letting them down. And, like, you know, they look to us for help, but we don't do it. I guess a little high and mighty, but then he turns out to be the most racist.
He's 24 years old. Much like
he's in charge.
Hard to tell
army men what to do and whatnot.
Bumps you as a...
And we're in the cop's face too much. Like, she didn't really get me up against that wall and make me feel like what it would be like to be in the shoes, which would be terrifying. I mean, it was brutal. It was hard to watch. And I have hard enough time, you know, hating myself and hating my white skin a lot of the time and feeling guilty about what my ancestors did. And a movie like this, I don't know what its purpose is other than dividing us even further and just putting a wedge And I could say the same thing about 12 Years a Slave, but at least that was such a different time, so far back.
Yeah.
And
maybe the headline was right from the Huffington Post.
That's what I'm thinking when I see a movie like this. It's like, what is this movie doing other than just, all right, I appreciate telling the story how it actually happened, and you know, you're just outraged throughout the whole movie. Now, the reason why I kept vacillating back and forth, I like it, mm-hmm. I don't like it, I like it, I don't like it. Here, it's really rare, Brian, that one line in a movie makes me like or not like a movie, mm-hmm. and that's the case with Detroit.
Can I hear the line?
You can't, because it's based on fact, and there's not like a whole lot of reveals. This is not one of those movies where it's like it makes or breaks it with right. reveals, right? I told you, there's just chaos everywhere. Murders, cops are shooting and killing black people, beating them with billy sticks. Bloodied black people is what you're seeing throughout this entire movie. These three cops, and like one is like the three main racist cops that we get to know is the Will Poulter guy, who is like the creepy and looking guy. He just looks like, that's mean, but you know what I mean? And then one of his partners.
Good luck getting him to star in Groupers too.
He has his there's no Grouper 2. He has his sleeves rolled up, and he's like the sex offender guy, right? He's like Ajax from the Warriors.
Okay.
Right? But he's a cop. But his shirt's always like unbuttoned and stuff, and he gets a little bit frisky. Oh, I should mention too, like these two white girls being with these black guys is probably what sets off the cops, makes them even more angry. And then the third guy is like just a beefy, dumb jock. Mm-hmm. All right. He's just dumb. He doesn't quite understand what's going on. He's go-along guy. So they have them all up against the wall. One of the guys, I won't say anything else, but he runs away. He gets away, and he's running and running, and he gets to a wall, and there's lights in his face, and oh, shit, it's a cop, right? He's way down the street now, away from the Algiers Hotel. And here's what the cop says to him. On this night in Detroit, 1967, during the riots, the third, fourth night of the riot, bloody black people everywhere. This cop, you will never see him. He's like a faceless cop. He's a young guy, though. He says, oh, my God, are you okay? Who would do this to someone? It was one of the worst moments I've seen in any movie.
Yeah, that's
it just any hope that I had, because you know when you're watching a movie and you're going back and forth, like I think I might love this movie.
You want to correct the ship.
Yeah, like that was just a cannonball to the side of that ship, mm-hmm. Brian.
It's a death blow.
I don't know what it was. I don't know what that is. What was that? It was. I mean, people always say I don't like to be taken out of movies, but. Immediately, I'm like, how is it? How did that make it in the script? And how did that make it?
How far in was it?
Oh, it's like end of the second act.
That's tough. Can't recover from that.
Oh my God, what happened? Who would ever do this to someone? He was just up. That's what you were seeing that night.
It's not hard to imagine. You're seeing it everywhere.
It'd be like in war, in Vietnam film, if like a GI saw like a Vietnamese guy, you know, bloodied. Oh my God, come here. What happened to you? Who would ever do this to you? It was a fucking war, and it was the cops against the black residents.
Quite easy to imagine. In fact, you don't have to imagine. Just
so
look
around. This movie's probably going to be up for Best Picture. Like I said, it's critic-proof, even though it's not quite as high as I would expect. I know what the score is right now. But it was a huge letdown. And anytime I have top most anticipated movie, Summer...
You can know that it's
death nail for
doomed.
Me.
Doomed.
Now, people are going to like this movie. There's a lot to like about this movie, but there's too much not to like for me.
Coming up next.
Jesus Christ, I'm sorry. I'm sweating.
Now you're worked up.
I just wish it was a good movie.
I want every movie to be good.
But especially like...
Important movies by big directors.
Like important movies. Yeah. About a time, things that actually happened. Mm-hmm. And I do feel like this is just going to stir the pot and make certain segments of our society hate other segments even more. You know,
those people.
I don't understand what it causes, what it corrects. You know,
what it addresses,
or how it makes. And existence. I've seen a lot of headlines like, we've come. We haven't done anything. It's just as bad now as it was in 67. Look at this film. It's like it's a film from today.
Do you agree with that?
No, I don't agree with that. I think that it's there's still a lot of racism, and especially in the certain police departments. But I think that some of these police, I think that people fucking follow each other. And if you go in to a certain job setting, and you know, your superiors are saying these are the ones that are causing the crime, these are the ones that are doing this, you're apt to follow. I think people follow.
I think it's conveniently naive for people to sit, you know, the quote unquote in the ivory tower, but like from the comfort of 2017 and say, oh, we haven't improved at all for 1967.
And I don't even know if me being...
Tell the people who barely survived
I think the people from Selma and whatnot, like, they would be... That's what I say. Exactly. Yeah, that's insulting.
Who survived civil rights.
Malcolm X and... Yeah, it's insulting to...
To say that everything is perfect, but it's by measure of magnitude better.
But I don't know if we even have the right to say that as white middle-class men. I don't know if we do. Okay. Honestly.
I think that's more racist than anything I've ever said.
How's that?
Because I'm a white middle-class man. I'm offended. Come up next.
That's my aim, is
we'll
to
talk about
you.
Our dream pairings next. Anderson, you started thinking about little Atticus's first birthday there?
Yeah, I've decided not to have a party.
Smart.
Yeah,
me too.
Yeah,
yeah.
I don't want people in my house.
But are you gonna do something, you know, like to memorialize to celebrate the event?
Yeah, we're taking them out of town.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm jealous
because it's right
around our anniversary.
This is the first year we get to do this. It's right around his birthday is 4 days after our anniversary. So we decided when we realized his
I'm taking notes.
We're going to take him out of town for his birthday, but it's really going to be for us. But he's always going to think, oh, they're being nice and taking me somewhere for my birthday. But it's like, no, it's actually for our anniversary. It has very little to do with you, Atticus.
That's a great idea. Yeah. Well, if you're throwing him a party, you'd want to get Batman birthday cake candles, six pieces, which someone only six pieces, either a six-year-old or six individual cupcakes.
I'm looking forward to having actual birthday parties once he's old enough
to know what's going on.
I don't like the parties where it's like adults trying to have drink because you can't have fun. And then they bring their kids too, and like your kids, like when they're this young, it's just
the 1 year old birthday party. The ones I've been involved in have either been way too many people and a headache, or you know, just small family and intimate,
right?
Which, you know, then becomes sort of a drinking thing. But I like your option C.
Get out of town.
Fucking leave.
And you know what else is like? I know how I feel when I have to go to. It's only happened a couple times, but I have to go to some fucking kid's birthday party now because I got a kid. So I don't want to put that on parents.
I agree with you.
I don't want you to feel obligated
to come celebrate.
The first one I went to, I was talking to a dad. I'm like, this is brutal. He's like, get used to it, dude. Like, this is what you do.
Get
like,
used to it.
Every other weekend.
I have encountered
once
people.
Once the kids are in school, it's like it's always someone's birthday.
Yes, and I've encountered other people, like friends there with the kids, and they're like, oh, we're leaving. I'm like, you've only been here 45 minutes. We have three other parties to go to. Oh, no.
I got to start early on indoctrinating this kid into like hating parties and hating birthdays.
You can do a Jehovah's Witness thing and just go anti, you know, celebrations and holidays.
Yeah, but then if he needs a blood transfusion. All right.
Other things purchased on the Amazon banner. Click through on AndersonandBrian.com. I mentioned the Batman birthday cake candles. Our friend clicked through for 100 Western Digital Purple 4 TB surveillance hard. 100, not 20, not 40. 100. He's outfitting some buses.
That's nice.
That's pretty good. 6 Hayden Automotive Rapid Cool Thin Line Electric Fans.
Hayden it.
2 Synology IP Camera License Packs, as well as a Synology Visual Station. International 75-inch 15-drawer black tool cabinet with 6 heavy-duty ball-bearing drawer slides. Gigabyte... Logan, you know this is AORUS. Is that a well-known brand of gaming box graphic card? You know what
possibly.
That is? Okay,
that's good. Good answer.
Guy who works for CNET would know the answer to that. DJI Phantom quadcopter drone with 2.7K HD video camera, a Dyson Ball Animal 2 upright vacuum, Nintendo Switch with neon blue and neon red Joy-Con, Samsung Galaxy S7 4GB LTE smartphone. Garmin Forerunner 35 watch in black, 2 nightstands with a drawer/shelf in white/espresso, an Amazon Echo Dot was purchased, 2nd generation in black.
Alexa,
is the Echo different than Alexa? They're different, right? Does the Echo work with Alexa?
Echo's the product. Alexa is this technology
software,
inside.
Okay, Siri's the product. iPhone,
exactly.
Phone. Okay. Didn't know if Alexa was a thing.
And there's different models, too. Like, the Dot is the smaller one.
Yeah, and the Echo, the full-on.
And is it mainly just the speaker is the difference? Is that the main difference? That everything else is the same, pretty much?
Yeah, or a different utility. There's one that has a camera on it.
Oh, the camera freaks me out.
JBL.
Stop looking at me, Alexa.
Flip 4 waterproof portable Bluetooth speaker was purchased. A Texas Instruments. Remember the TI-84, the graphing calculators you have to get?
Everyone had to buy it.
Yes, that's when I realized that math was way beyond my capabilities. That's it. I'm out. I've cashed out on math.
That's when I just realized that obviously the school board had a huge, colossal contract with Texas
Instruments.
TI.
Natural, intimate, personal lubricant for sensitive skin. Water-based, discreet label. Personal loop. As well as a set of sheets, Anderson. Emoji Nation. They're twin-size sheets, hopefully for a child, that's covered in emojis. Like lots and lots of little smiley faces with, you know, horns and smileys and devils and.
Is it for the movie that's killing at the box office?
It's cleaning up. It is.
I'm sorry. I'm looking for your email. I should have been more prepared.
Come on.
Because
I sent it to your new Beat email address.
It's not Beat. It's pretty sweet, and I can't find it.
Not sweet. Beat.
Here are the movies that were clicked through since the last time I saw your bald ass, Brian.
Let's hear it.
Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, Disney Special Platinum Edition. Mm-hmm. We're going to run out of precious metals pretty soon.
That's right. Unobtainium.
You know, unobtainium? 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 Thank God it's not a real thing. Unobtainium? Unobtainium? How do you say it?
Keep going.
Unobtainium.
Keep changing the letters.
I was talking to a guy.
You haven't got it right yet.
I'm not. Unobtainium.
Nope.
Unobtainium.
Ooh, close.
Unobtainium. Unobtainable. Unobtainium.
There you go.
Unobtainium. Got it, buddy. Nailed it. Woo. You know, I talked to a scientist on a chat with Andy.
That's the greatest woman podcast history.
A few weeks ago, and he let me know that scientists have been using that for quite some time. That's been like part of their lingo.
Really?
Yeah. So it's
to
not
describe
like,
what? Something that you can't
just,
get?
Yeah, something that, that would be like, just, I think that they use it as a stopgap, like, you know, for like something that didn't have a word for.
Look at all that cheddar. God, Giovanni Ribisi was so great in Avatar. He was the best part of that movie. Look at all that cheddar.
Here are the movies that were clicked through since last time we saw it. Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, Disney Special Platinum Edition. You know, they're going to run out of precious metals.
Well, I have an idea.
What? The Royal Tenenbaums, the Criterion Collection. They're going to run out of Criterions pretty soon. Alice in Wonderland. Alice in Wonderland Masterpiece Edition. I've seen the Masturbate Edition. It's pretty good.
That's
She's topless throughout. The Tommyknockers. What the fuck is that?
That's a Stephen King movie. Right?
Stephen King movie.
The Tommyknocker Stephen King?
I don't even know what that is.
Could have sworn it was.
Why am I so quiet? What's going on? The Town that Dreaded Sundown. Ooh, The Town that Dreaded Sundown. Look at that. Mm-hmm. By the guy that did Me and Earl and The Dying Girl.
Ah.
Wow. The Fugitive, It Follows, The Hateful Eight, Bedknobs and Broomsticks, La La Land, and Reanimator.
I've watched Bedknobs and Broomsticks as a child. It's one of the few movies my grandparents had.
Is it a euphemism for...
No, it was like an Angela Lansbury movie, I think. Mm-hmm. No, that was Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. That was a different movie. Back to the show.
It sounds like a porn.
Back to the show. Hi, this is Roger Moore, you know, 007 himself. And you're listening to The Film Vault on AndersonandBryan.com. Yeah, welcome back. That's why you gotta listen to the commercials, the ads, the reads.
Wasn't that good, Brian?
I want people to make some fan art out of the unobtainium.
Unobtainium. Unobtainium.
Anderson. Got it. Sitting there.
Unobtainium. Unobtainium. I got it, dude. All right, let's move on. All right.
Top 5 dream pairings for writers and directors.
You went for a stinger or something?
No,
what's going on? That was weird.
That was just my headphones. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Like I said, I have criteria. I have a method of my madness.
Right.
I think I got some good pairings here. It's like, you know what this is like, Anderson? Mm. Like seating people at your wedding. Logan, listen up. When you see people at the wedding, sometimes you have to mix a couple of randoms together, and you want to get those tables, you know, just right. You want to get the chemistry.
This is a stretch, Brian.
Why?
We're stretching.
I know.
It's more like having like two of your favorite bands or like two bands with very different sounds, but you like to see what would happen if
no,
like
you
took
like
a few people from each band and like had them sit in the studio for a few weeks.
What if you took people from each band and sat them at your wedding? It's like setting two people up on a blind date. You want to make sure you pair them just right. You don't want to.
Can we just get to it, please?
Get to it. Number 5.
Oh, you know what? I didn't even flick fest my favorite movie I saw last week.
Well, why?
Son of a bitch.
Why?
All right, you know what? Ah, shit. I lost this week. I had a master plan, Brian. I was going to assign you the movie.
Okay.
I have homework assignment. I'll talk about it at the end of the episode, but I'll flick fest it when we come back. We're going to take next week off. We're playing a classic episode.
Do you
want to
do it next week?
No, I want...
I'm saying for that.
I want you. I would love it if you saw it. I don't want to assign it to you, but I would love to flick fest this movie. It's a documentary about Scientology that you have not seen.
I've not seen because I've seen a Scientology documentary called Going Clear.
Have you seen my Scientology movie?
No.
Holy shit! So much fun. The most interesting, strange documentary. I'll talk more about it at the end of the program. Let's get back to the top five.
Where can one see this?
It's streaming on Fuckflix.
Okay, my Scientology documentary. My Scientology movie.
Louis Theroux. You ever heard of him?
No, Justin
Theroux. British
Theroux.
Personality.
Okay. No.
Justin Theroux?
Justin Theroux is the writer of Top Tropic Thunder.
What about Henry David Theroux?
He was also in American Psycho.
You ever read The Night Theroux Spent in Jail?
Either dating or changed married life, to Brian. Jennifer Aniston.
Changed my life. The Night Theroux Spent in Jail.
Really?
The man of such will. Henry David Theroux, that is.
Is that why you were so excited to spend the night in jail when you did?
No.
Okay.
I spent, no, which night?
That's true. You spent multiple nights in jail.
Let's talk about Frankenstein projects.
Top five dream pairings.
Yeah.
Thanks, buddy. Let's, I'll start at number five. I feel good about number one. Number five for me is this is a good one to start off with. People can see what we're talking about here. This is bread and butter. Two guys who I think need each other. We're kind of made for each other and really should just get it over with and work together. I want to see the writer, Kevin Smith, not the director, the writer Kevin Smith, who I think is a little better than the director Kevin Smith, work with director M. Night Shyamalan.
What?
Yeah, get M. Night Shyamalan, who is, we've established.
That's just a fucking mess. That's a mess.
No, it's not. We've established M. Night Shyamalan, talented director.
Talented director.
He's
an alright
Even
director.
In his bad movies, there are moments of effective suspense, thriller, action.
Yeah. Have you seen his early work, though? I have not.
Like
his really cheap stuff, yeah. Because, well, I mean, he's got like Hollywood.
Why would that matter?
Chic. What?
Because if he's getting a screenplay from Kevin Smith, it's going to be a big budget movie.
Yeah. Well, not necessarily. I mean,
okay. Well, in my world, it is. It's a fantasy. Okay. Kevin Smith, at his best, writing movies like Clerks and Chasing Amy.
Cop Car.
And he's also
not Cop Car. What was it? Cop Out. Cop Out.
I saw Cop Out.
Neither did I. I'm going to, though. You know why? I need to. I would like to. Because Mr. Plinkett did a review of it.
Really? So
that's how good Mr. Plinkett is. Like, I'm willing to see movies
to see
I would
movies.
Never see just so I could watch his review. Oh, and I also forgot to talk about this at the top of the show, Brad. New Mr. Plinkett just came out today as we record this.
He still does new ones?
Oh, absolutely. Oh. New Ghostbusters. Mr. Plinkett. Find it now on your YouTube.
Deserved. Protagonist.
I can't wait to see Mr. Plinkett. I'm going to be talking about that in our week off.
I want
to
hear him say Unobtainium.
I'm going to be watching that on our week off here, Brian.
Kevin Smith, a talented writer, I think, who, shall we say, lacks a distinct visual style as a director.
He's a strong dialogue writer.
Yes, he is.
Writer.
And M. Night Shyamalan is definitely
not.
Weak
dialogue writer, right? Okay, you might be onto something there.
So Kevin Smith, for the last few years, has been drifting into M. Night Shyamalan territory. You know, Red State and Tusk and just sort of this bizarre, high-concept... I wouldn't even call them, I guess, thrillers, but also a little bit sci-fi, a little bit horror. Like, just get it over with. Write a great Kevin Smith script. Let M. Night Shyamalan take it and run with it, and let's make some magic.
The danger there is they both have such, like, blind spots if they both...
This is a highly volatile mix.
Yeah.
Highly volatile.
It's like a black and white cookie, and if you like chocolate and hate vanilla and you're trading blindly, you might get all chocolate if you hate that chocolate.
Okay, well,
you know what I'm saying?
We're not going to get very many, like, dream pairings, like... great writer, great director. These are going to be guys who need each other. We're going to work well together.
Here we go. Number five for me.
Yeah.
Trey Edward Schultz. Oh, I should also say I'm only doing not only living writers, directors, but people that are working like now.
Yeah, I would assume we're going with.
I had some fun ones, but they're dead. But I just wanted to, like, you know, pare it down to like something more workable because it's too big.
I did not choose any deceased writers or directors.
Trey Edward Schultz made a little film called Kreisha.
Okay.
He also made a very well made film called It Comes at Night. This guy can direct. He blew me away. I saw both of those just a few weeks ago, a couple months ago maybe. You never saw It Comes at Night, did you? Get out.
No, sorry. Logan switched my headphones and it's actually way worse. Sorry, buddy. I know you're trying. I appreciate that. Comes at Night. Wait, did I see It Comes at Night?
You're being distracting.
Tell me again about It Comes at Night.
Well, it's about this thing that comes at night.
Okay, yeah, I saw that.
No, they're holed up in a house. It's like apocalypse,
no,
post-apocalyptic.
I didn't see it. No, 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 no. Yeah, I remember you talking about
rave reviews.
I remember from you.
Well-made movie. No, well-made movie, but I just not much going on there. But this, he also made a film called Creature that I went back and saw. I think that's on the Fuckflix over there. Mm. This guy's got a style. I'm talking about Trey Edward Schultz. However, only two films in, and neither one of them, I don't think the writing was quite enough of a punch. You know what I mean? And he wrote them both. Charlie Kaufman.
Ooh.
I would love to see Charlie Kaufman. This is a little more esoteric than my other picks.
Okay.
I allowed myself a little wiggle room here with my own dream pick. But if I was like a producer working in Hollywood, I would figure out if I could get those two in the same room, right. See if they had any kind of chemistry.
Nice.
Oh, I could see that.
Inspired choice.
Charlie Kaufman. Of course, Charlie Kaufman did Adaptation and Being John Malkovich and Synecdoche, New York. Schenectady, New York.
Synecdoche.
And what else did he do? He's done a number of things. A number of films. What's that one that I... Michael Gondry. Eternal Sunshine.
Of the Spotless Mind.
Spotless Mind, yes.
He's a film that came up last week on Listener's Choice for movies that influence relationships.
His most recent work was Anomalisa, which I could not stand.
Mm-hmm.
Could not stand. Anomalisa. All right.
Didn't bother.
Charlie Goff.
Number four for me. A guy who, in 1996... Remember thinking, man, I hope he. I think this guy's destined for stardom, but I hope he writes some more because I really enjoyed Swingers. Jon Favreau, the writer, paired with one I think is one of the great action directors of all time, who has been saddled with some terrible material, Gore Verbinski.
Oh, Gore.
Yeah, Gore Verbinski directing a Jon Favreau script. Now, Jon Favreau has ventured into directing. Of course, he does the Iron Man movies, Jungle Book. Mm-hmm. Who better than Jon Favreau? And he's also producing the Avengers movies, so he's got some story influence in terms of where the whole thing is going. Who better understands the big action storytelling arcs than Jon Favreau at this point? He's made some very effective.
I think there's
big
other
action
people that probably understand.
You're right.
Well as, are you kidding me right now? You're saying Jon Favreau is like the like,
no, but I'm saying there aren't many better. I'm saying I'd like to see him do some more writing. He wrote Swingers and he did Maid, which I thought was a little underrated.
He's very bro-ish. He would write something bro-ish.
He might, but Gore Verbinski can take great material.
Gore Verbinski
can take average material and make it great.
He's so unrecognizable from one film to the next. He's capable. He's very capable, but he's like Joel Schumacher. I don't really see any through lines. I don't see his fingerprints on stuff.
I know what you're saying. I do see his finger. So
he goes from Rangu or whatever. No, Ringo.
Ringo.
Ringo. Ringo. He goes from, he makes The Ring, and then he makes, what's the, with Johnny Depp, lizard cartoon?
Wasn't it called Rango?
Rango.
Yeah.
I get confused because the Japanese original Ring is called Rangu.
Ringu.
And then he makes The Weatherman. It's like, who is this guy? What's he doing? And then he makes
Pirates of the Caribbean.
Pirates.
I felt Pirates of the Caribbean, Pirates of the Caribbean 2, and you never saw The Lone Ranger, which is a good decision. But... And I said it before, the opening and closing action sequences in that movie were amongst some of the greatest things committed to film. Gore Verbinski can take...
statement.
They're fantastic. They're spectacular. They're true spectacles. Gore Verbinski can take below average material and make some great, great stuff out of it. I want to see him work with a guy I'd like to see get back in, writing Jon Favreau.
Number four for me.
Mm-hmm.
Family Affair, Brian. It's a family affair. And I the twisted mind of David Lynch... created.
Doesn't David Lynch have to be writing his own material?
What? No. Well, kind of.
Okay.
He can still be here because Jennifer Chamber Lynch, his daughter.
Oh,
I would love to see the two of them.
Oh, the father and daughter team.
Father and daughter team.
Oh,
yes.
Very nice.
Bring your daughter to work day, David. I don't know why they haven't worked together. She, of course, did Boxing Helena as well as Surveillance, which no one saw. A very, very odd Bill Pullman film. Very,
I don't
very
know why I haven't brought
film.
My daughter to work yet. Why can't I bring her to the show?
As well as Chained. Oh, I will call you Revit. Chained with Vincent D'Onofrio a few years ago. That's the last feature film she's made. She's found herself working a lot, but all in TV. She does like two or three episodes of this. She does like American Horror Story. She does a bunch of different TV because she's a very capable director. And, you know, when you get TV work like that, it's kind of almost like babysitting. Like
steady
you just kind of sit and, you know, everyone, all their characters, they don't need motivation. You know, one of the main things you do as a director is work with the actors. You don't have to do that much if you're like a fill-in director on a TV show. Everyone knows where what they're doing. It's like a babysitting job. That's what she's been doing the last 4 years. I would love her and her daddy to get together. I remember watching a documentary about David Lynch years ago, and he does very odd art projects. Get this. Weird art projects from David Lynch, right? Mm-hmm. One of them would be like he'd paint something. He'd put like a steak on a on the painting with a trail of like sugar and honey.
Okay.
And then he would lead ants to the steak so that the ants would eat the steak away until he was like, he felt like the art was done.
Okay.
Like the steak.
Living
like,
art.
I call this one steak face, right? And he was talking about the reverence that his entire family has for ants. And if they ever find an ant in the house, they carry it outside. Mm. I do the same thing with flies, even. I hate it. But
that with ants is tedious.
I could see, like, I'm sure that he and his daughter have had some real bonding family moments. And not only do I want them to work together, I want to see, like,
I want to see him bang.
I want to see them work on some David Lynch family moment movies. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I want to see, like, a
There's
biography.
Some real behind the scenes.
Yeah, I want to see, like, what that family like.
Wouldn't it blow your mind if he was, like, the most normal dad?
He probably is. I want to see, like, a Noah Baumbach type family drama. Written with the Lynches at the helm. Wow. Written by her or him. Directed by her or him. That's all.
Yeah. Number three for me. A writer who's come up already on one of your lists. One of your entries, I should say. But yes, Charlie Kaufman. He's a great writer. I have not seen too much of his directing work, but he did write Being John Malkovich, but I loved Adaptation, which had its moments. And Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, which also had its moments. And a writer who, so Charlie Kaufman obviously works, his work is very heady and very, a lot of think pieces and not mainstream
at all. Very self-aware.
Yeah, not mainstream at all, plays with expectations
a lot. But it's like, I think Adaptation was up for Best Picture. I mean, it's fairly mainstream in sense.
Mainstream, I don't think it's, but yes.
He goes against the grain, but he finds himself in the mainstream.
None of these movies are going to top the box office. You know what I mean? They're not going to be a big earner. This is not made for a wide audience. It's made for, you know, people to hopefully enjoy on an intellectual level. I call him a very intellectual writer.
Well, yeah, he doesn't make popcorn movies that like are going to be like, this week's biggest movie. Yeah, all right.
The guy, a director whose work I have enjoyed and I think is a talented director and hasn't worked since 2009 and to this point insists on writing all of his own material to his detriment perhaps and is a pseudo-intellectual. Like his stuff is kind of heady but also not like to the level of Charlie Kaufman. And I think he aspires to be that. Richard Kelly from Donnie Darko.
Oh.
Donnie Darko's Richard Kelly.
Did
also
you look
director
him up? I have not looked at his IMDb
I thought about him because he's a director who I think is talented and he directed Southland Tales, which is one of the worst films I've ever seen, but also a memorable film, which tells you something like bad movies kind of come and go and like a 3 or 2 star movie that you remember nothing about. At least I've thought about and keep thinking about Southland Tales. Like there are scenes that stick with me to this day for better or for worse. But he also is, I think, a bit of a pseudo-intellectual. Like he wants to have messages that don't quite come across like I think he wants them to. And I never bothered seeing The Box, which I think you did.
I did see The Box, yes.
And that was the last movie he did. That's the last time he's really worked in film.
I wonder what he does now. Is he a teacher?
That's almost 10 years ago.
What's he doing?
I think he did a little bit of TV, but there's not a lot on his like his
Wikipedia.
What's
a guy like that doing? How are you making a living there?
I mean...
Is he doing Chats with Richard?
Is he did he have a lot of ownership on Donnie Darko? Did he make he got that Darko money?
I don't think that he was in a position to take points on that.
Yeah, you're right. First time writer director. Kind of. Anyway, I would love to see Richard Kelly get back in the game with a Charlie Kaufman script and really.
Maybe he did because I remember he was being courted pretty hard.
But also, I remember that Drew Barrymore kind of had to stick her neck out to get the movie made. I don't know.
It fascinates me though. Like what do like. I know with actors, sometimes they go through some really, really hard times.
And also, he was a really hot commodity after Johnny Darko, so maybe he got paid a shitload for Southland Tales.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant for Donnie Darko itself.
No. Like afterwards, there was like a bidding war for his services and whatnot. He was supposed to be the next big thing. He could be the next Spielberg, they're saying. Might be the next Spiele.
There's still time.
I would also like to thank, now's as good a time as ever, to thank our listener. We should have probably done this at the top, but in one of my chats with Andy and just talking to John Singer.
Oh, was this the suggestion?
Yeah, he was talking about it. He didn't even suggest it. He was just saying, you know, I think he asked me this question, and he says he would like to see M. Night Shyamalan and Woody Allen pair up to make a movie one day. And I said, well, listen to this, John. Woody Allen's no longer in my world. Mm. No.
He's dead to me.
But I said, oh, I really like it. Immediately said, wow, you know what? That'd be really fun to maybe do a top five on. So here we are weeks later. So thank you, Mr. Singer, for this.
Yeah, good topic.
Number 4 for me. 3 for me. Oh, this is a fun one. Okay. Man named John Milius.
Wait, is he still alive? Oh, that's when he had a stroke.
Alive.
Yeah.
He's alive. He's hanging on. Mm. He wrote a little movie called Red Dawn. He also did Conan the Barbarian, as well as Dirty Harry, Apocalypse Now. Yeah, big movies. Yeah. Lots of stuff going on.
Yeah, machismo.
Lots
red
of stuff happening.
Red-blooded American.
I would like to see Paul Thomas Anderson tackle one of his scripts. And here's why. I love Paul Thomas Anderson, and I hesitate to even suggest him directing anything other than something that he created and wrote. But I do believe that There Will Be Blood is an action-packed film in Paul Thomas Anderson's head. I think his heart rate is very slow. I think he's super smart and intellectual, and I think that he finds lots of interest in the minutia and the
detail. A dramatic turn to him is like a big set piece.
And if you hear the score for There Will Be Blood, it sounds like an adventurous score. There's not a lot of adventure there. Right. I mean, without Daniel Plainview, that movie is unwatchable to me. I love it.
It's a showpiece for Daniel Day-Lewis.
But without his performance and Paul Dano to a lesser extent as Paul Sunday, I would like to see what Paul Thomas Anderson, because he's so good with the camera.
Is it Eli?
Paul Thomas Anderson.
Dano is.
It's Eli Sunday and what was the other one? There's twins. Remember?
Oh, it's twin. I don't even know.
You're right. Eli, of course. I called him Paul. Yeah. I'd love to see what he would do with an action-packed, like, over-the-top man's man, like, movie from Milius.
He'd probably completely subvert it because, when he did, like, his 90-minute Adam Sandler comedy was Punch Drunk Love, which resembles nothing Adam Sandler's ever done.
Oh, so good.
So good.
So good.
I'll loan it to you if you want. I don't know.
So fucking good. You know what? I have a computer and a credit card, so I can watch it whenever I like.
So you can watch any film you pretty much have freedom. Access.
I have freedom. Do you understand what that means?
Freedom.
You understand that almost anyone can watch almost anything at any given time?
It really makes it infuriating when it's that one rare film that you can't access online.
Try not to talk about those movies.
Rare. Coming up next, we'll take a break, and we will discuss our top two entries for Dream Pairings next. Anderson, we got that sweet, sweet email last week. Here's your promo code.
Oh, yes.
Blue Apron.
You know that
enjoy.
goes to my dead email, but I still go back and search
for the one reason you go back to your old email address for Blue Apron.
Because they give us promo codes every now and again. Because I don't know if you know this, but I get Blue Apron on my own. So those,
oh, really?
Those promo codes. Oh, yeah. I love it.
It's worth it.
Love the Blue Apron.
What do you love about it? You mentioned before you love the learning of the new ingredients.
I love learning the new ingredients, and I hate wasting things, and I love that I use every single last drop of ingredient that they give me in that box. Yeah, because it's the little stuff that stresses me out. I don't stress the big stuff. I stress on the little stuff, and like if I want to make like some kind of like dish or something, I have a hard time buying a full head of like Napa cabbage.
I agree. It's funny you mentioned one of the cheapest items you can get. I hate going to the store.
It has nothing to do with money. It feels wrong.
Yeah, I hate going to the store to get like you need a certain spice that you don't have.
Oh, yeah,
like
saffron.
$15 for a tiny little jar. Like, right. I'm gonna use literally 4% of this.
Yeah, yeah. Like they I'm always using stuff, and they're like mirin or something was like one of the main ingredients last week. Like and saffron, which costs more than gold.
Very expensive.
Evidently, like they use saffron in one of their recipes. It showed up in the box. It was beautiful, beautiful thing.
Were you just mad about saffron?
I don't get the reference.
It's an old song. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/TFV. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's blueapron.com/TFV. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Welcome back. Top two time. Crunch time, as it were. Dream pairings.
Get this, Brian.
What's that like?
I like my top two the most.
Me too. It's usually the way it works. Mm-hmm. Number two.
Go ahead.
I'll go first.
That's the way we've been doing it all day.
Oscar-nominated writer for the screenplays of Toy Story, WALL-E, and Inside Out. I'm going with Pete Docter. I guess you could throw in Andrew Stanton, who co-wrote a couple of those movies, as well as Finding Nemo and or John Lasseter. But if we're not just, casting a huge net, I'm going with Pete Docter, the guy who writes flawless, flawless films, with a guy who essentially makes animated films anyway of decreasing quality, Zack Snyder.
Mm-hmm.
Director of 300, director of Sucker Punch, which I made you watch.
Oh.
director of Watchmen.
This is triggering me, Brian.
Man of Steel, Batman vs. Superman. He essentially makes animated films.
Have you seen a trailer for the
Justice League?
Oh,
yes.
Oh my God. Really?
So good.
Are you kidding?
It looks awful.
What in the world is happening? Like, that's supposed to be entertainment?
I'm going to go in with an open mind. I'm hoping it's going to be good.
It looks like it's someone doing a bad Zack Snyder interpretation.
It's
right?
Zack Snyder doing a bad Zack Snyder.
No,
it is Zack?
It's Joss Whedon doing a Zack Snyder impersonator.
It's not
Joss Whedon
yeah.
took over for Zack
yeah,
Snyder.
It's not Zack. It's Joss.
Oh, but what?
It did not feel like it didn't quite
But didn't
quite
he take
have...
over at the last minute? Like,
they did a lot of reshoots since he took over.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it has a very...
Well, they already did a lot of reshoots. Then Joss Whedon took over. Then they did even more reshoots.
Excited,
right,
like,
what I'm saying is it's effectively...
No, not for that one.
Won't Zack Snyder be the credited director?
Maybe.
So what I'm saying is it has a very
either Humpty Dumpty or Alan
Zack
Smithy
Snyder
will
vibe.
Be the official director.
Oh, I see.
Humpty Dumpty. Remember that?
Yeah, from American History X.
Yeah, this movie's This movie's changed tones and done reshoots so many times.
I saw a very silly
You're talking about story. You're talking about like plots and whatnot. I'm talking about what I'm seeing, which is just... a lot of like cartoony slow motion.
Yeah, I saw
motion.
A very silly trailer. What seemed to be very silly.
It wasn't trying to be silly though. It was supposed to be badass.
Very playful.
With Aquaman in there?
Yeah. Yeah.
The Khaleesi husband?
Mm.
You don't know what that is. No, you don't know what that is. I love that guy too. What's that guy's name?
Jason Momoa.
Jason Momoa is tat.
I know him.
He is tat. But I don't know what's happening.
Let's rest Zack Snyder off of this downbound train he's on and match him up with Pete Docter, who's got a sunnier view of things, at least from the films that he's worked on, and get those two together. And it could be an animated film for all I care, or a live action film. Either way, let's meet in the middle.
Who are the
two
again?
Zack Snyder, a very dark and effectively an animated director, and Pete Docter, the writer of Toy Story, WALL-E, and Inside Out, all nominated for best screenplay.
So just
because
one guy makes cartoony like movies, and then the guy makes
actual
cartoons.
Good, great cartoons.
Okay,
this is a rehab situation for Zack Snyder.
If cinema, let's go back to DC.
Every time you tap the table,
sorry, I can't. We're working in the studio where if I touch the console, all of our headphones short out. So my apologies, and I'm a very fidgety individual. Let's go back to talk about Justice League. Mm. Justice
it looks
Fleek.
Really good.
Justice on Fleek, whatever it is.
Will there be an Enchantress?
If Christ could be, if
she shows up,
if cinema survives another 5-10 years, which I don't know if it will. I'm afraid that like there'll be maybe like every city will have 3 or 4 like big movie houses and maybe like 50 movies get like theatrical releases. I'm afraid that's where it's going. Either way, if it's 20, 30 years from now, we look back on like this period. Aren't all these action like comic book movies? Aren't they going to kind of feel like the Jean-Claude Van Damme movies of
yes,
the 80s?
Yes, absolutely.
Like it's going to be silly, right?
This is going to define this era of movie, of filmmaking, for better or for worse. Like there were great there were great movies made during that sort of red-blooded 80s, you know, late 80s, early 90s. Yeah, there were.
Very, very few.
You guys are assuming that film will still be the way it is back when you look back on this era. We might be into like virtual reality by then or holograms.
I saw what Peter Jackson's working on right now with his AR. What is the AR? I think. Whatever. Yeah, we
might be experiencing the end of film.
I'm. You know what? In old true old man fashion, like it's give me 2-dimensional like letterbox, you know, widescreen glory, right. And I tell a good fucking story and do it in a limited capacity. I don't need to be inside the fucking room with like, you know, creatures over my shoulder.
Sure.
Just tell me a fucking story and have some cool characters with great dialogue
going
back and forth and help me understand what human nature is all about and the human condition.
I think the television revolution is kind of
fucking immerse me. I don't need to be immersed.
This revolution we're in the middle of, this great television era, is kind of backing you up. Like, great story is going to win out. It doesn't need to be crazy experiential. Like the crazy experiential stuff, the VR or that theory or whatever, feels like it's desperately grasping at straws of an era that's no longer there. Like just tell great stories and people will show up. Like people are where they consume it might be different in their homes.
I think
or
what really
venues
is going to make a difference and what is going to be most impactful is the video game industry and how for the movie industry to survive, it's going to need to get the people that are spending their time and money on video games rather than than films and movies, and they're going to have to get them to cross over. And I think I'm afraid the only way to do that is to do something with the BR and whatnot. There's going to be old people like you and I saying, no, I just tell me stories. Yeah. But I'm afraid a lot of the kids would rather, like, you know, play out, be a part of those stories.
We'll see.
They're doing stuff now where they have, like, VR experiences that you go into after you watch the movie, which kind of speaks to your point, where, like, you go see the latest Spider-Man movie, and then you go get to be Spider-Man in VR right afterwards in the lobby of the theater.
And do they, like, but here's the question, do they like that a lot more than the movie?
It's like a bonus thing, like you buy a premium ticket.
But if they could only do one or the other, like, what do they choose?
Oh, right now, I mean, it's all gimmicky, so right now it's the movie.
Right, okay, good.
Yeah.
See, that's we keep doing that, and then we see, like, where they end up landing. Mm. If you can only do one or the other, what's it going to be, you know, 10 years from now?
All right. Number two for you.
Number two for me. This is a fun one. I like this one, Brian. Michael Bay.
On my also-ran list.
He's a large director. And you know what? Say what you want about Michael Bay.
You want him as a writer.
But when he's not doing CGI stuff, because he used to pride himself. I don't want him as a writer. I want him as a director. Mm. He used to pride himself on being like the practical director.
Yeah.
Like actually shooting on film and using real big explosions. And they used to actually have an ad that ran out here before movies. Remember the calendar ads? LA Time ads?
The calendar section. Yeah.
And they had a bunch of... probably for about 5 years, there was almost always a Los Angeles Times ad for the calendar section before every movie you'd see.
That's right.
And some of them were so goofy and ridiculous. I would look for those on YouTube. I couldn't find them. I would love to track those down. I probably have seen 30 of them. Anyways, one of them was him talking about, that's how I get my mojo. I still shoot on film. I'll be the last guy in Hollywood still shooting on film. Real explosions. And I mean, look what he's done now. Yep. But before that, with like Bad Boys and
The Rock.
The Rock, guy knows how to frame. He knows how to like do shots.
I think The Rock is an extremely effective action movie.
What's the one that he did where
Pearl Harbor?
I never saw. Oh. Stop it! Stop it! Stop it, Brian! No, the one where they're like body trainers. They're fitness.
Pain
trainers.
And Gain.
Pain and Gain. Yeah, that was the last movie that I saw of his. That was it's not a good movie at all. But he.
It was
had some
tight.
Good framing.
Yeah.
You know, he knows how to like make a plane go overhead and look. So anyways, get this. All right. You ready for this? This is a little odd couple. Todd Solondz. Todd Solondz writes a Michael Bay directed film.
Now, a lot of times I feel like
Todd Solondz, he did Happiness. He did storytelling. He did
very anti
palindromes.
A lot of what Michael Bay represents.
Welcome to the Dollhouse.
I feel like Todd Solondz would need to be informed ahead of time. Like you're writing a Michael Bay movie.
Now here's what I really want to see is the documentary about Todd Solondz finding out that his story, which he doesn't have rights to anymore because it's been optioned and bought out from underneath him, is being directed by Michael Bay.
Oh, so he doesn't know.
I want to follow Solondz watching and reading about his project being created by Michael Bay.
Sure.
I want to see the actual film, but I also want to see that documentary.
More people will see that movie than a combined scene all the previous.
It's
kind of
like the virtual reality thing. Oh, Todd Solondz?
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. But I would like to see what he does with like Wiener Dog, like what he does with that character, or what he does with like Consuelo and Scooby Doo, like these characters that I know and love so much from the Todd Solondz world, which is, I mean, it's a really tragic, heartfelt look at really sad
taboo subjects,
and just. Like I say, what I love about movies most, Brian, is like, you know, you can watch a movie from a certain time period and kind of get an idea of what the culture was like. And I think with Todd Solondz films, while they may be a little bit twisted and morphed, you do get an idea of like what were taboo subjects and what were touchy subjects and what we were as a society at that time.
Yeah, good point. And Michael Bay's the perfect guy to bring that to light.
I would love to see him grapple with that.
Wow, you took a very different approach.
I would love it. I mean, I would get excited. I would get in line to buy a ticket for a Todd Solondz directed by Michael Bay. Absolutely.
Well, my number one is a director that was mentioned by you and is one of our favorite directors. And I agree that it's hard to imagine. Easy, buddy. It's hard to imagine him doing any project where he's not the auteur, the writer, as well as the director. But if P.T. Anderson is to direct a script written by someone else, you know what that someone else to be?
John Milius.
Another another writer-director, auteur, who I think has fallen on, let's call him hard times, Cameron Crowe. I want that Cameron Crowe script. I want a heartfelt Cameron Crowe script in the hands of...
You know what? You know what? I would have been on board with this if you said Christopher Nolan.
As a director?
Yeah.
Why?
Because
his films are soulless and cold.
Yeah, I almost had it on there. But, you know, Christopher Nolan, he writes all of his own stuff, or he and his brother write all their stuff. Mm. But I was trying to find the right writer that to pair with him. Cameron Crowe is the guy.
You didn't think about Cameron Crowe?
I didn't.
No.
But Cameron Crowe's the guy because he knows, like, human emotions. He knows what that is.
Course.
He's so good at Say Anything and Aloha.
But Vanilla Sky, which I love, maybe
it's a remake.
Love,
so
but,
you don't really...
Almost Famous, Jerry Maguire.
Almost Famous is like it's heartfelt.
Yes,
and like,
of course.
I would Christopher
captures
Nolan.
That the crushing painfulness of youth. I agree. I want Paul Thomas Anderson to be the director. Christopher Nolan is, of course, a great choice.
Yeah, he's a genius. It's just really hard.
I feel like P.T. Anderson, in his last few films, The Master, and to a much greater extent, Inherent Vice, has just got up his own ass so much with the writing. Just like he can't escape from what's in his head or what people think a Paul Thomas Anderson script should be.
Inherent Vice was just, he loves that author. He loves that writer.
Maybe he did. Doesn't mean he should have made a movie out of it.
Yeah, but it's not up his own ass. It's up other things that he gives him. I get the sense that he gives himself and gets obsessed with different things.
I can see that.
And he's self-aggrandizing, I guess, in a sense.
But he's made some great, great, great movies. Some all-time greats, in my opinion.
Yeah. But I guess it's a little self-indulgent is what I'm thinking. More self-indulgent than up his own ass,
yeah.
Right?
Okay, well, I think we're saying the same thing, but you said it better than me. Hand over the reins, P.T. Anderson. Let Cameron Crowe hand you a beautiful, loving script and do what you will with it. Dude, these are two of my all-time favorites.
Aloha, too.
Aloha, too. Aloha again.
Aloha wasn't awful.
Really? I didn't bother.
It just didn't... It wasn't worthy of a Cameron Crowe.
I'll be in Hawaii in 2 days.
Kind of like Vanilla Sky.
By the time people are hearing this, I'll be either on a plane or stepping foot in Hawaii.
What do you do in Hawaii?
I'd say aloha to people. I go to sites where aloha is
filmed. Why do you go to
filmed.
Hawaii? You don't seem like a beach person to me.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, that's exactly why. That's when I, for about a week, I become a beach person.
Do you?
Yeah, I wear nothing but shorts and either T-shirts or Hawaiian shirts.
Who are you living the kid with?
Bringing the kid.
What? Why would you do that?
Bringing the baby.
Why bring sand to the beach?
What?
Why bring sand to the beach?
It's implying a lot of babies in Kauai.
I don't know. Number one for me. Can I do this so we
please,
can put this fucking
please,
thing to bed?
Please.
Quentin Tarantino.
Writer, director.
He's the Kevin Smith of violent author screenwriters, right?
Meaning what?
They're both very wordy. They're both very clever.
He's verbose, yes.
But he tends to write a little bit more violently.
Hmm?
And more clever, I guess, than Kevin Smith. But I do. Am I alone in kind of seeing a lot of similarities as far as the way that his scripts are written, the dialogue
between the two?
Yeah,
sure. I mean, there are some stark differences, but there are some similarities for sure.
My favorite thing Tarantino's ever had his name on to this day is by far True Romance. Like, I just absolutely love it. I think it's a goddamn masterpiece. Tony Scott directed it, of course, Ridley Scott's brother, late brother. And I loved that. I think Tarantino's a visionary, and he's really good at mimicking and remixing things from the past. Like, if he was a movie maker, in a lot of ways, he'd almost be like a DJ, or
sure.
He's, you know, mixing things.
He's making something new out of old parts.
But to this day, I still think True Romance is the best thing that his name is on. And
that is dead wrong.
Tony, what?
Keep going.
What is? You could say Kill Bill or some shit.
I would not say that.
What do you say?
I like True Romance as well, but I think it's out. I think even Glorious Bastards is better. But
oh,
anyway, we can keep going.
So Tony,
we're splitting hairs.
Tony Scott,
I like all those
Tony Scott, no longer with us. Denis Villeneuve is.
Denis Villeneuve.
Tell it. Denis Villeneuve is the closest thing we have to a Scott brother, I think, living amongst us today.
Well, we actually have Ridley Scott living amongst us.
Yeah, but he's no longer Ridley Scott. Let's be honest.
Shadow of himself.
No, I mean, why isn't he redoing Blade Runner?
I know,
you know what
saying.
I mean?
He's of the up and comers, or the guys that are establishing themselves.
I think that Villeneuve would do a yeoman's job. It'd be a remarkable film. would come out of that pairing.
Remarkable. Agree. I agree. I think the strength that Quentin Tarantino has these days, and I think he's slipping a little bit, the strength that he has is creating...
You know what he's working on now? Mm-hmm. Charlie Manson.
Oh, you told me that.
I didn't ever told you that.
I heard it on the
Corolla show. I learned it since I saw you last.
Okay. Maybe that's where I heard it.
I did never tell you.
I heard it on the Corolla show. The strength of Tarantino still to this day, I think, is creating those great scenes, some tense, some funny, but he has the ability to craft a perfect scene here and there. And if you can just
write a perfect scene.
Yeah, if you can write
those
scenes.
The eggplant scene in the middle of True Romance is the best scene I've ever seen in any movie ever, anywhere, ever.
And Denis Villeneuve knows torturing.
He does. Villeneuve, I didn't even give his credits. He did Arrival. Was it The Arrival or just Arrival? It was just Arrival. Arrival, Prisoners, Incendies.
Sicario.
Sicario. Enemy.
A talented director. A very talented director.
Enemy. You say Enemy yet?
Yeah, it wasn't very good.
Spider.
I don't remember that.
Spider.
I remember Jake Gyllenhaal twice, and neither one was interesting.
Spider.
There were two Jakes.
How do you not remember Spider?
I don't care.
What?
It was a really good movie.
Wait a minute.
What?
Spider means nothing to you when I talk about Enemy?
If I saw it again, I'm sure I'd remember.
Holy shit.
It slipped from my mind.
Here's what I said about Enemy.
I remember more about Southland Tales than I do about Enemy.
Earlier in this episode, I said it's really rare that like one line can ruin a movie for me, and that's what happened kind of in Detroit. Like, it really made up its mind for me. Very rarely does the very last thing that you see in a movie ruin a movie for you, but it turned Enemy into an okay movie, into a shit movie, the last scene.
Really? I don't remember.
Absolute shit.
Damn it.
Spider.
I'm glad I remember.
How do you not remember Spider?
I don't know. Because it wasn't very good.
Brian, what's the matter? Did you get up and leave? Did you get up and pee during the last scene?
No, I had high hopes. It was a Denis Villeneuve movie that I saw after the fact. I think I saw it after Arrival.
You excited about Blade Runner?
Fuck yeah.
Sad. I know. See the trailer?
I got to lower my expectations.
I'm pretty low on it.
Really?
Pretty low. My new thing. I'm
You banned all expectations?
Yeah, everything. Everything just looks awful before I see it, so that it will be surprising.
You've reached true default to no status.
All right, let's wrap it up.
Any listeners? Do we have a consensus? Do we have a listener top
five? I know, it was kind of all over the place. It's hard to.
Any interesting choices? That's Logan for I didn't write it down.
Yeah, I didn't write it down.
Thanks for voting. Sorry your choices didn't get...
no recognition. We apologize.
You can go on our Facebook page and check out some of the listeners.
Wow. That's a lot of work. That's a lot of work.
All right. You want to gamble?
Should we do this again?
Hey, you know what? John Singer, Woody Allen, M. Night Shyamalan. That's the listeners list. That was the two that he... That outrageous pairing.
Not the listener list, the listener list sparked this entire
topic for this episode.
All right, let's gamble.
Let's do it.
Son of a bitch.
I got cash.
All right, last week, hang on 1 second, you gambled on Atomic Blonde.
Ooh.
No, we didn't.
Oh, no, you didn't. I'm sorry. Detroit. At the time, the Rotten Tomatoes score...
I thought I was right for a second.
At the time, the Rotten Tomatoes score was 96%. Ooh. Anderson bid 94, and Brian 93.
Oh, that's right. Probably on top of each other.
Currently, the week after its release, the Rotten Tomatoes score for Detroit is 86%. Maybe Brian the winner.
Wasn't it much higher last time?
96. He just said that.
Okay, sorry.
It slipped 10%. That's surprising to me because, you know, I think that we're supposed to like this movie, but it does have some shortcomings for sure. And I don't understand how that ridiculous moment happened in that movie. I really don't.
God, it's been a long time since I won. Wait, what's the score?
Go see it. 86.
Oh, if I'd done my stupid bit again, I would have won 88%.
You did win, Brian.
I know what I'm saying. It would have been even closer.
Why would you even mention that? If I picked another number that was closer to the number that it is, it'd be closer.
I've seen some really good movies in the last few weeks, and I want to assign one to you. Some good docs.
All right, I'm going to take this time to talk about a movie that's streaming on Netflix.
For the ones I'm actually trying to choose.
2015 it came out. I am shocked that no listener has let me know about this movie, and I hope not to oversell it, but I spoke about it a little bit earlier. It's called My Scientology Movie.
And yes, you told me about that.
I would like to talk. I'm going to talk about this not next week because we're doing a classic episode next week. The week after, I'm going to talk about this. Hopefully, I thought I was going to win this week. And the dream scenario is I signed this movie to my Scientology movie to Brian. However, I did not win. But maybe you'll just watch it because you're looking for something good to watch when you get back from the old islands over there.
I might.
My Scientology Movie is a documentary starring one Louis Theroux, who I never heard of before. But I've never seen a documentary like this in its experimental ways, its use of score, its storyline, its uncomfortable moments are fucking hilarious. And I absolutely loved it. I thought that I was done. I've seen enough with Scientology. Going Clear was very informative, chock full of information. But my Scientology movie is really fun.
Yeah.
And if you had any kind of not sure one way or the other with Scientology, which I tend to do with things because I don't like to be like all in one way or the other. I know that's shocking, but on big things, I don't like to be like that.
Okay.
Yeah, this one kind of gives you.
Okay. My Scientology movie.
My Scientology movie.
All right.
Laughing out loud a couple times in this movie. Hilarious. A couple times.
Would you like to see a documentary,
What's your documentary about
a band or a documentary about a film director?
Film director, please.
Okay. There's a film out there, a documentary, a new one called John G. Avildsen, King of the Underdogs. John G. Avildsen. Does that name ring a bell?
No, not at all.
No, good. Then just fire it up and see what happens.
I don't like the sound of it.
You've seen his movies.
How about S for Stanley? Because I still haven't seen that. Should I watch that?
Was it S for Stanley?
Yeah.
No.
It's a new Stanley Kubrick documentary. It's been on Netflix for 2 weeks, 3 weeks now.
I can't authoritatively say whether that's good or not.
I feel like I should watch that instead.
John G. Avildsen, King of the Underdogs.
It's one of the worst titled films I've ever heard.
King of the Underdogs.
Can I just look up King of the Underdogs?
Yes, you can. Okay. You absolutely can. In fact, that might be the actual like theatrical title.
I shouldn't look up John G. at all?
You absolutely can. He'll be one of those guys like, oh, that guy. Mm-hmm.
All right, this week you're going to be gambling on Annabelle Creation.
What the fuck is that?
A prequel to Annabelle.
What the fuck is that?
A scary movie about a doll.
Conjuring.
Yeah, it's in that.
I like how every piece of information you give me does not clear anything up.
It's in that line of horror movies that are cheap to make but do really well in theaters.
What else? I'm just curious.
I always think that Sylvester Stallone directed Rocky and he just wrote it. I always forget that John G.
Avildsen directed Rocky.
Directed Fucker and Karate. Ah, shit. All right, it's a
King
good
of the Underdogs.
Documentary.
King
good
of the Underdogs. Right. King of the Underdogs. Logan.
It's a two-hit wonder. He directed 8 seconds.
Sweet. He directed a couple of flops.
Mm-hmm. Rocky V.
Karate Kid 3.
This is good? Is it a good movie?
Yes. You're going to like John. You're going to like John G.
Yeah?
Yep. He's a director. Part of the reason he never really became a household name, he doesn't politic. He's not a director who's interested in politicking. He just wants to make movies. And by the time they made this, he was like a nice old man.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fucklicks?
I don't know where this is playing. I saw a preview of it a couple weeks ago.
Is it even playing anywhere, Brian?
Yeah, no, it's available. It's all over the internet.
Okay.
It's everywhere. Logan, just curious, what else comes out this week? Is that really the biggest movie?
The Glass Castle, Ingrid Goes West, The Nut Job 2. Good time.
The Nut Job too.
Everyone's scared of Detroit and right. Wind River.
Annabelle.
Wind River probably goes wide this week.
Annabelle.
I'm telling you, between Wind River and Detroit, Wind River is the winner for me. Hurts me to say that. Fucking Detroit. Come on now. Hockey town.
Logan looks at my number sometimes, trying to read his face like it's a poker.
All right, Annabelle, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's too high.
Let's go. Did you see my number?
No.
No one likes this, Brian.
I think it's actually a highlight of the show for something.
So I don't know if I said during Detroit my babbling, ranting, waxing review, but the cops, we just don't get any kind of back. We no character development.
It's just kind of like cartoonish racist.
Let's get, they're all going to be racist. Let's get one, he's like in charge. He's kind of like inbred. One's like a sex predator and one's a jock. Okay, that's what we need.
It's a hell of a sitcom. What's your number?
77.
77?
Hearing very good things.
I wrote 27.
Oh, you shouldn't do that.
Oh, shit.
Currently, the week before.
If this is anywhere near 77, Anderson's fucking cheating. There's no way you think this is 77.
I'm not cheating. I've been hearing good things.
With 25 reviews,
ooh.
The Rotten Tomato score for Annabelle Creation is 80%.
25 reviews.
100% cheating.
I am not cheating. I don't know if you know this about me, but I've not seen the original Annabelle.
This is outrageous.
But I've seen Conjuring and Conjuring 2.
This is outrageous.
These cheap horror movies do really well.
I'm not saying they do really well. But
it's a, no,
review
it's a,
wise.
It's a good movie.
I hate you all.
These who's the director of this one?
Probably the same guy that did all those.
Is it Woo? Moon?
John Woo?
I heard a really interesting NPR piece about the producer of all these movies.
They're good. They really are.
I hate you all.
David F. Sandberg.
Oh, it's not the same as at all. It's not the same as the Conjuring. I have not seen the original Annabelle. So I will. If this was The Conjuring 3, I'd be in line right now to buy tickets. I am hook, line, and sinker into The Conjuring. Hook, line. James Wan is the name I was trying to. And I said Woon. Damn it.
Did James Wan do Saw?
He did.
Okay, that's right. Another name.
But it's the same universe, Brian. That's the universe that I can get involved with. All right? Not your fucking people wearing underwear on the outside of their tights.
They're talking about superhero films?
Yes.
That's my universe? Thank you guys for listening and downloading. And thanks to Scott W., the fan art this week.
Scott's been sticking to a theme of album art, of album covers for artwork.
No, that's excellent. A little TFV underneath.
That's horrible.
It's so good. That's old Andy right there.
That's, yeah. That's
or sweet, young Andy, as it were.
Sweet threesomes, Andy. God, I was a fucking pain in the ass back then.
Is that pre-Broken Back?
Pre-Broken Back right there, yeah.
Wow.
Andy, I was on my way to death right there. I was high as
that's
a fuck right
on the
there.
Bad the road, Andy.
Yeah. All right.
Thanks, Scott. I don't know, where do you find that? Do you post that on your Facebook or something?
I don't know where. I never posted that. It was a friend of mine post. I would never post that fucking picture.
No. Thanks, Scott. Check out AndersonandBrian.com. Another excellent album cover. Thanks to our feature artists this week, Crash Kit, Fontaine, The Bush Leaguers, The Sound Objective, Youth Culture, and The Winter Sounds. Thanks, fellas. Check us out Facebook, Twitter, The Film Vault on both. Aloha, everyone.
Stop it. We do it for Vanguard.